Welcome to the show. Today, we are here with Joshua Skirtu, awesome author and blog writer.
Arthur? I'm an Arthur now.
You're an Arthur.
You've
recently written the blog, The Android's Guide to Enslaving the Human Race. Hi, Joshua. How are you?
I'm good, Angela.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, silly.
So, Josh, what's with the title?
My new blog, The Android's Guide to Enslaving the Human Race.
Oh, what's the website, by the way?
It's www.androidslavery.com.
All right.
So, yeah. What's with the title? Yeah. So, it's tongue-in-cheek. Like, I cover it in the first post where I'm talking about why I call it that. But the reality is, like, I don't know. I always felt a little bit of an outsider growing up. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a perspective a lot of people see with something like an android, where they're mechanical, there's something that is the other. So I kind of always empathized with androids growing up. So
would you consider yourself an android?
No, I know I'm a real boy.
Oh, okay. Are you sure?
I'm a little bit of an android.
How are you like an android?
I overanalyze everything.
That's true. He totally does.
I overthink everything. Like, one thing I overthink is just what to order at a restaurant. Like, just sitting down, I'm like, okay, that's too much.
Yeah, too many things at the menu.
Like, if we go to Cheesecake Factory, mm-hmm. it's just overload because there's too many things on
the
menu.
I do a type of Russian roulette where I pick three things, and then right when the waitress comes, I have to pick the one that goes fastest.
And then you kill yourself,
and then I kill myself with the food. Usually it's cheesecake, though, so it's fine.
You kill yourself with cheesecake.
So what made you decide to write a blog?
So I wrote a book called You're All Going to Hell, Love Story.
It's a very good love story, by the way.
Yeah, it's very good. Very good love story. And, you know, everybody said, you know, if you want to be an author and be published, you have to have a blog. So I was like, okay, I'll write a blog.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went, originally the title, The Android's Guide to Enslaving the Human Race, I had planned to write a book.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up kind of not working out, and I ended up writing that book instead. So I liked the title a lot, and that the plan was to write, you know, my perspective in life from the point of view of an android, playfully, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
so they're all autobiographical stories?
It is autobiographical. So I'm covering my life and my experience with things like PTSD and trauma and my parents, who were cult members of a religious cult.
Are you going to talk more about cults? Because that's really an interesting topic.
I am. So I have three posts up already, and I mentioned it a little bit, but I don't go into detail yet. I am writing about it, though, and there will be more stories about that. But I was 2 years old when my parents left the religious cult. They were in the Children of God.
What is that cult like? Was it a fun cult?
So it's considered a doomsday and a sex cult.
This just in, Joshua was in a cult until he was two.
I was not in a cult. I was just dragged around by people who were in a cult.
It was kind of interesting.
So yeah, I had an interesting upbringing. And yeah, I always felt really weird because I'm surrounded by these people who think it's a good idea to join a cult. And I've never thought that was a good idea. That's not my mindset. I always kind of felt different, even from my own family.
Mm.
And honestly, I jokingly always called them you people.
I think everybody calls their family you people.
What's
to be
wrong
fair?
With you people? Because they just don't make sense to me. And people a lot of times don't make sense to me. That's why the Android perspective.
Well, so what kinds of topics are you covering in the blog?
So the cult, PTSD is a big one. The first post kind of goes into detail of what it's about.
Okay.
And what is the second one? Second one is talking a little bit about last year. So 2017 was a really tough year for me, where my PTSD kind of got re-triggered over and over again because we had a really, really rough year. We had marital problems. We had some suicide going around and hospitalization of multiple family members.
Yeah.
I had a major surgery, like a spinal surgery. You had your grandmother pass, and that was really hard on you.
Yeah, essentially 2017, everything broke for us.
Yeah, and while it wasn't as big of a part of the problem, we also got a new president, and I didn't like him. But I don't want to go too much into that.
We don't want to be political. Are you going to cover politics in your blog?
I want to stay away from it, but it's kind of hard because my novel has a lot of tyrants in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big topic these days about, you know, there's actually a border wall in my novel.
Oh, yeah.
The children have built a border wall to keep all the adults out of North Hell, you know, pretty much.
Well, it's hard, too, because, I mean, while everybody says you're supposed to avoid sex, politics, and religion, they're pretty popular topics.
They are.
I mean, how are you going to avoid all those?
I'm not. Okay. So the reality is I'm going to talk about them, but I'm going to try not to be too ranty about it. Because the reality is, like, I love people who are religious, who are not religious, other people who are Republican, who are Democrat,
libertarian, even those.
Like, most people, when you talk to them, they're reasonable people, but the internet and news kind of like takes it to another level and it makes it unreasonable. But if you actually sit down and talk with people, most people are pretty reasonable people. Most people don't want to hurt people. Most people want to be safe. That's it.
So what are the topics of the first three blogs that you have up there?
Well, I have them right there.
Okay. Well, I'm asking you.
So the first one covers why I wrote about it, why I wrote the topic, and talks a little bit about my how I empathize with the androids and all that. The second one is how to talk to humans.
How do you talk to humans, Josh?
So when I was younger, I don't know. I have always had really high social anxiety. Okay. And it really triggers the most when I'm in either a large group of people, even with people I know, or people I don't know at all, if I'm talking to somebody I don't know. And that's always been a struggle for me because it makes you act so weird when you have it. Like, it makes you kind of either clam up or just say the stupidest shit.
Yeah. That's so true.
So when I got to college, like, I didn't want to do that. Like, the reality is I wanted to be able to talk to girls. That was the big driver behind it. So I took a communications class, interpersonal communications class, and in that class they talked about the structures of conversation. Like, they broke it down in a mechanical, scientific level, and I was like, oh, that's awesome.
So then you could talk to people suddenly.
So then I decided to try to make my own method for how I would push through my social anxiety, and my method pretty much comes down to having a list of questions that I commonly ask that type of person. So at Capilano Community College, where I was at, they had a cafeteria, and it was always really crowded at lunch, so I would sit down at a table where other people were sitting, because there was nowhere else to sit, and I would just talk to people. And doing that, I would just have a list. So with college students, I would say, what's your major? In Hawaii, everybody asks, where's your from? Where are you from? Or, you know, all that stuff. Or where do you work? Do
so
you
basically like having a script.
Basically interviewing people. And it worked for me because, I mean, I do it for the podcast as well. But like, it worked because when I got, when I just followed that script for a bit, eventually I would calm down. And I would just engage with the people. And sometimes I wouldn't. Sometimes the people would just be squirrely. And they also, I'm assuming, have
anxiety.
They have
social anxiety, too.
Or they'd be like, why is this guy asking me about my childhood?
Well, I'm sure it wasn't always that question.
I wouldn't get that dark, that deep on the first time meeting somebody.
But I've definitely noticed a lot of people with social anxiety, that's the biggest fear, is like, what do I do? So
what
if
you
have kind of these steps, like, here's how you handle this situation.
Right.
And it's kind of like an android. I'm doing this on purpose because
I have to I have to purposefully do it. I have to I had to pretty much recode myself. Huh. That's what I kind of say, is like, I had to recode my personality to get past that because it was really tough. Because I want to talk to people too, especially women. And I really wanted to get laid in college. It's an important part of college.
Well, it's something they don't teach men, how to talk to ladies.
Yeah, exactly. And I didn't grow up with a dad in the house. So I didn't really, and I don't think he was very good talking to ladies either. But
I wasn't taught how to talk to ladies either. So we're in the same boat. High five.
High five. I think you got around that. But like, what were we talking about?
We were talking about the different blog episodes.
We were talking about talking to humans. So like, it really helped. It made it so I could talk to people. And I eventually had girlfriends and made friends doing that. And I felt a lot less isolated. And I met my wife, Angela.
Yep, his rules did help him meet me. It kind of worked out.
It worked, yeah.
That and I had a few tricks up my sleeve, so.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She was easy, though, because, like, the first time I met her, she just made me give her a lap dance.
Yep, that's the trick. That's all you got to do is get a man to give you a lap dance, and he's yours. Putty in your hands.
Yeah, make a man sit on your lap, and he's yours forever, pretty much.
Well, so you mentioned that you have PTSD earlier. Yeah. I'm curious, but you're not in the military.
No.
So, like, where do you think yours came from?
Well, my childhood. So it,
how does one get PTSD, Josh?
From repeatedly dealing with trauma. Mm-hmm. And that's, in my case, every kind of trauma you could think of. And the hardest one was my family. And I love my family. That's mm-hmm. the hard dialectic I have there is like, I love them, but they also were pretty terrible to me as a child, you know? Mm-hmm. So I dealt with a lot of physical abuse and verbal abuse. And because my parents were also so weird with the whole cult thing, I had a lot of, I think that's where a lot of the social anxiety came from too, because when I was a kid, my mother would actually introduce herself to people by saying, "Hi, my name is Marlene and I was in a cult."
She still does that somewhat.
And I was 10 years old. I was 8 years old, 10 years old, and I would just go, "Oh God, why can't we just be people?
Why can't you just say hi? My
why
name is...
Why can't it just be normal?" And I just so wanted to be normal, but like they wouldn't let it happen. Like it, and that was the struggle with my childhood, is mm-hmm. trying to feel normal with people who just would not let that happen.
Newsflash, Josh, nobody's normal.
I know, but I'm very not normal.
I think a lot of people will connect with your blog for that reason, because yeah. I feel like a lot of people felt like they didn't feel normal growing up.
Sure, and I talk about that in mm-hmm. that post about a little bit about how, you know, parents can make you feel... Oh, no, I haven't posted that one yet. Oh, but okay. I do talk about that
coming soon.
About dealing with parents who have mental illness. My parents have mental illnesses. And it really makes you feel super awkward. It makes mm-hmm. you feel like you're on stage all the time because they're constantly... saying shit like that draws a lot of attention, and not mm-hmm. positive attention all the time. It's more like, "Whoa, there's a train wreck right there." I mean, come on. Somebody tells you they joined a cult. It's like, so what was the recruitment process like?
What was it? Do you know?
yeah, actually. I know a little bit. I don't. So the Children of God use this thing called flirty fishing.
Oh.
And the way they
sounds
did
like
that.
Sounds like my kind of cult.
Yeah, it was a sex cult. And what they did, they would do is they send the women out into the world to have sex with men and recruit them. Say, "Hey, why don't you come back to our compound or come join us for whatever." And
for Bible study.
For Bible study. Yeah, because they were a Christian cult. Mm-hmm. But...
Sex works.
Sex does work. And my mother said she never did that.
Okay.
I don't think she would ever tell me if she did, and that's fine either way. But like, to me, like, people who are in that place are people who are easily exploitable. And that's mm-hmm. the hard part, is like, my parents are easily exploitable. If they're willing to join a cult and sign up for something like that, they have to be.
All right.
And I don't like that. I don't like it when people exploit people. Like, mm-hmm. I love my family. I would never want anybody to hurt them, you know, mm-hmm. or anybody.
Do you still experience PTSD symptoms now?
Oh, yeah, all the time. I did yesterday.
What kinds of symptoms do you have?
So,
you're okay with answering.
Sure. So there's a trigger. Mm-hmm. Like, I can go into different types of things that trigger me, like money or trauma, talking about trauma.
Dogs barking. I live with a guy, so I do know a few.
Yeah, every time somebody knocks on the door, I get triggered a little bit. And mm-hmm. it's actually really tough. And we've considered getting rid of the dogs because of it.
Not because we don't love the dogs.
No, I love my dogs.
They give an emotional response.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a physical response. So it's not actually an emotional response. It's a physical response. So I get a trigger. Mm-hmm. And when you get that response, your heart rate rises. Your chest feels tight. Mm-hmm. You feel... kind of like somebody's attacking you.
It's a crisis. You go into your fight or flight mode.
You do, and you feel physical symptoms, and mm-hmm. you feel a sense of dread, and like you need to do something. Mm-hmm. And the instinct is to be violent or run away.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the instinct. And I'm not violent, to be clear. I have done violent things in my past, but I got better.
You got better.
Once I got out of a violent environment, I calmed the fuck down. Like, you're around violence, you're going to react with violence.
It begs the curious question, what kinds of violent things did you do, if you're open to answering? you don't have to answer, because
I mean,
I know
the reality
hard.
Is, like, I had two older brothers, mm-hmm. and they beat the shit out of me all the time. I mean, I don't think
you got
lot,
in fights.
Yeah, and I had fights. I was a lot younger than them. It was mostly them hitting me. Mm-hmm. But, like, I would respond, definitely. I would try to fight back, but mostly because I was so much smaller than they were. Because they were older than me, and they were also a lot bigger than me. I was a little kid. Mm-hmm. When they would do it, I didn't have a lot of recourse. Like, I couldn't fight back. So what I would actually do is I would break a window. Like, I would throw something and break a window, because that would stop everything. Because all of a sudden there's evidence. So when my parents eventually get home, they can say, hey, what the hell's going on? You know? So that was it. I threw a chair through a window. I threw a hatchet through a window.
You had to make do some damage to the property some way.
Yeah.
And that was a survival tactic.
Yep. And I've done things I regret, but yeah.
Did you, you know, you said in your post that you wrote A Guide to Talking to Humans. Did you not talk to people before that?
I talked to people, but I was very depressed all through middle and high school. So I didn't talk a lot. But like if I were with somebody I really trusted, like in a small, in a closed environment, I would talk. Like we would have conversations and stuff. But if I was out in public, yeah, I would pretty much clam up. My social anxiety would just keep me from talking to people. So everybody just assumed I was the quiet guy, you know?
Yeah, either shy or a jerk. It depends on how they personally deal with quietness.
They assume, oh, he's just a jerk. But, like, I had one friend who was also a quiet guy, Lee, and we worked together at Taco Bell. And I remember one of the girls was looking over at us, and she's like, you guys hang out? I bet it's a riot. You guys just sitting there quietly together. But the reality is when we were off on our own, we were very talkative, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it makes it easier if it's just one-on-one.
Right.
Is your social anxiety still pretty intense?
Oh, yeah. Okay. But I've learned tactics to get through it. I've taught myself. I've gone to therapy to help with it, too. But mostly the tactics I use have helped. And just learning not to give a damn, you know. That's another post I wrote about is...
How does one not give a damn, Josh?
Well, you just don't give a fuck. And that's something I've been trying to do. And so I wrote about it in there is like when you go through a lot of trauma, you can clam up or you can just stop caring and be a nihilist. So I just decided to be a nihilist.
And for the record, what's a nihilist?
So you just see nothing matters. Like, and when nothing matters, you can actually focus on what does matter to you, which is what makes you happy.
So you're letting go of caring about everything
except for what matters to me.
So what matters to you?
My family and my friends. Mm-hmm. And that's it. People. People matter to me. But worrying about what to order at a restaurant or worrying about, oh, my taxes or this bill is going to be due or all these other stupid little things, I've learned a lot better about letting go of that.
Yeah. Okay.
And I wrote about in that post about some people that I kind of looked up to a little bit.
Who are the people you look up to?
So they're all fictional characters, but I empathize a lot with Sherlock Holmes. Okay. So especially the newer one in the BBC series.
By the way, they're all going to be dead inside people.
Yeah. Sherlock Holmes, Dr. House. He's my spirit animal. I always say that.
Who's also kind of dead inside.
He's definitely dead inside.
But who also deals with chronic pain and stuff.
Right. They all deal with issues. And the third one is Rick from Rick and Morty, who he's my new favorite.
What, you like Rick? He's wearing a Rick and Morty t-shirt and currently. Morty right there. And he's always posting stuff on Facebook from them, too. So.
I'm Rick. Yeah. Wubble it up, dub dub.
But I remember in your blog, you said that like Rick himself, he it's not that he doesn't care. Like, does care. And
he puts on a little bit of a facade, too. Mm-hmm. Like, he's hardened by his life. He's dealt with a lot of trauma. They all have. And that's part of why I empathize with them. I'm not trying to model my life after them, but I think I realized at a certain point that I was a lot like them when it comes to some of the parts of it.
I wonder if a lot of men get to that point, like Rick or Dr. House.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think drives men to be that
it's
way?
It's called old man syndrome.
OMS is the clinical title.
You just eventually get old enough to not give a damn.
I've been joking with my clients and saying, so first what happens is you watch World War II documentaries, then you start buying guns, and then you get a house out in the woods. And that's when you know you've fully gone through the transition.
In that one, I'm talking about them and how they dealt with their own traumas, and they're highly intelligent men. They're not idiots, but they're actually really driven, and that's something I've always struggled with a lot, is being driven like they are. So while I don't like some of the stuff they deal with, and I do envy them for that. So,
So you think it's more likely to happen to very driven, intelligent men, the sort of dead inside, I have to not give a fuck
No, I think
mentality.
A lot of people get that, but I think some people push through it. Like, they push through it and they're successful. Mm-hmm. Like, they still have their problems, but they're able to, because they stopped caring what other people think about them. Mm-hmm. And that's something that social anxiety is really driven by, is me overthinking what other people think about me. Mm-hmm. And I think it helps a lot. Yeah.
That this particular post is talking about how to get over the afterlife, right?
Right. So it's called The Android's Guide to Not Giving a Fuck in the Afterlife.
Okay.
And what
so why that title?
So the title of The Afterlife is after 2017. So I dealt with a lot of extra trauma that year. And when you deal with so many in a year, like I dealt with like, I don't know.
Yeah, it just felt like we were getting blow after blow, man.
I was getting blown.
That was a rough year.
I was getting blown every month.
And he doesn't mean the good kind of blowing.
No, it wasn't
not
the blow.
Snack.
No, no snacks.
That's for my sign language fans. Only a few of them are going to know it, but it's hilarious.
Snack.
Yeah, that is actually blowjob.
Okay. Yeah,
we go on.
What was I saying?
You were getting blown every month,
but
not in a good way.
I was dealing with a lot of issues, and it made it really tough to function. And so I shut down a lot. I actually didn't talk to a lot of friends and family a lot that year because of it, because it just overloaded me. But in the end, I was in therapy. And my mm-hmm. therapist really kind of laid it out for me, like, one of these days, you're going to lose your wife. Mm-hmm. She's either going to die, or you're going to die, or she's going to divorce you. And you have to be comfortable with that, because nothing you do can change it.
Mm-hmm. And you'll lose me either way.
Right, and that's nihilism. Mm-hmm. And same thing with all of my family and friends that I love and care about. Like, that is one of my biggest fears, is losing those I care about. Mm-hmm. And I had to learn to be a little bit comfortable with that. And with that, not giving a damn about everything, it kind of gave me freedom to do things that I had been holding off on, like writing a novel. And that's kind of what ended the year, is me deciding to write a novel about hell.
That reminds me of that show we watched last night about the Day of the Dead in Mexico. That, like,
yeah.
That's the biggest thing that they're doing by celebrating it, is
they're
not going to fear
it.
They're accepting death. They don't fear it as mm-hmm. this big, terrible thing, you know?
It's Santa de la Muerta.
Santa de la Muerta. Yeah. Yeah, it's a celebration of the fact that death is around you, but that it doesn't have to overpower your life. Like, in some ways, it's empowering you to live life fuller mm-hmm. to
yeah.
some degree.
Right, right. By accepting death, mm-hmm. you can then live. You can be free. And it has helped me a lot, actually.
What kinds of freedoms do you get?
What kind of freedom have I gotten from it?
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to just talk to people, to mm-hmm. be in public. To try things mm-hmm. instead of just giving up before and admitting defeat, you know? Like, I finished a novel, and it took me months, but I did it.
So those things that people will say, like, I could never do this,
right.
or, oh,
like,
it'll never
people
happen.
Always say, oh, I always want to write a novel. And I've already written two novels before this, unpublished, but mm-hmm. it had been 6 years since I'd written anything. And
so,
and part of that was because I was in a multiple injuries, and that's mm-hmm. why I had a spinal surgery last year. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm. Well, so talk about your novel. I mean, you said you've written a novel this year. Tell us about it. What's the name?
The name is You're All Going to Hell, A Love Story.
What's it about?
So the story is of a guy who is depressed and suicidal, and to fix all his problems, his therapist decides to euthanize him. He doesn't agree with the
idea. There's no reference to me here, right?
No.
I promise I've never killed any clients.
She only killed me on the inside.
Emotional damage lasts longer.
Oh, yeah.
Go on.
So he dies. He goes, and he goes to hell. Mm-hmm. And it's when he's in hell that he actually finally can feel free. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what the story is. It's a guy who is kind of stuck in his life. He's depressed and suicidal, and he's given up, and then he dies. Mm-hmm. And when he's in hell, he can be a hero. He can try to help people, because it's not the like Judeo-Christian hell. It's my own version of hell. So there's no devil. There are weird, crazy monsters, but the biggest monster, of course, is humans, the other people in hell, especially the tyrants and the children.
Some would say the Earth is like this currently.
Yes, it is. Well, they say that science fiction is always a reflection of the current times. Mm-hmm. So while I did not intend to set out to write like a version of our world in hell, like, it kind of just made itself. Like, I wrote a border wall, and I didn't even realize the connection, because this was before the border wall. Well, it was already big at that point, but like, it was words.
Tell us about a border wall.
So the kids, the children in hell, mm-hmm. so they don't age. Okay. So some of them have been around for hundreds of years, you know. So they have the maturity of adults, mm-hmm. but they still have the body of children. And they, a lot of the children who die, die in very violent ways mm. in general. Like, I mean, think of any children that die. They either die of cancer or somebody murders them. So generally, generally they're going to be pretty bitter when
we're
they
end on a positive when they note show here. Up in hell.
No, children they die. Will be children don't die of old age. They die of violent deaths. Generally. Yeah. So the children in hell are bitter. They huh. are, and they're fed up with the way that adults have run the earth. Huh. So they've decided they're not going to let that happen. They're going to make hell great again.
No similarities at all to the current political administration.
No, not at all.
I see. So because children have always kind of been pushed around. Well, that kind of reminds me of your own, I mean, going back to your childhood, mm-hmm. you know, like you right. probably felt kind of pushed around a
oh,
lot.
Yeah.
So
well, I wrote about that in the blog, yeah, where yeah. I felt like I was used and abused and people could treat me as they want. And that's actually something I see a lot, and not even to the level of what I'm talking about, but I'm saying regular parents who are not abusive, I see people treat children like cattle. They usher them into this area. They push them along. They don't really have, some of them don't have relationships with them. They don't treat them like sentient beings. And I try to treat our daughter like a sentient being. I try to give her respect. We still ultimately have the final say on what happens, but we try to talk to her instead mm-hmm. of talking at her. We're not perfect at it, but
you like to have discussions and
yeah.
want her to have an opinion like right. she matters.
Like I remember being her age and I remember mm-hmm. my opinion not mattering and all the way through my childhood. Like my opinion did not matter. It was ultimately my parents making all the decisions and ultimately they make terrible decisions because they joined a cult. So they're mm-hmm. not going to make very good ones.
Well, and I think kids feel kind of powerless like that, right?
So, yeah.
But in your hell story, it sounds like the children are taking back their power.
They are. So... And they're not necessarily doing it in a good way, because mm-hmm. so they're
still human.
They're building a border wall, and there has been an influx of new arrivals in hell in the period that I'm at. Like there's a lot of people showing up. So all of a sudden, they're at the border wall. They have to build refugee camps. Mm. So yeah, there's a lot of mirroring to ours. So. The main characters end up in that refugee camp.
Mm-hmm. Who are the main characters? I don't think I've asked you yet.
Actually, so the main characters are Jasper and Matilda.
Okay.
And then
a love interest.
Yeah. And then the antagonist is Mateo, and he has his own story too. He ends up in the refugee camp, mm-hmm. which is run by Travis, the child leader. Of the little ones.
I love that you picked the name Travis. It's just a very Texan name. Josh grew up
yep,
in Texas.
I did.
So I was like, of course, the leader had to be from Texas or have a Texas name.
Definitely. Welcome back, y'all. We're going to hell. Who's coming with me?
Yeah. There's that Texan accent.
Oh, yeah. It's
it never
there.
Shows itself.
Oh, no. I don't even know what my accent is now. Like, really.
It's just Midwestern.
Well, I've always done lots of different impressions. So mm-hmm. I've lost my actual accent. Yeah.
So do you see the book as the book's mainly fictional, but do you see elements of real life in it? Or?
Sure. I mean, there's like I said, like sci-fi is always a reflection of our times. Mm-hmm. So you have the children who are trying to take over hell. Mm-hmm. They have these refugees who are trying to get into the part of hell that is not as desolate. So they're in a desert mm-hmm. and they're trying to get to kind of the mountains and the hills that are to the north.
Maybe so, a safer area.
It's a little bit like the border wall here. Like mm-hmm. they're down south in the desert and they're trying to get up here to where it's safer. Right. So it's a lot more dangerous in the desert. Mm-hmm. There's a lot. I mean, it's still dangerous everywhere in hell. It's hell.
It's still hell. But maybe it's a lesser version.
It's a lot less. There's less vegetation and stuff like that. So it's a whole world. It's not just like, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, what if somebody is wanting to read your book? What would be something you'd tell them to draw them in? Why should they read yours? Why you, Josh?
Why me?
Are you so special?
Why am I so special?
Well, I mean, I know, but everybody else needs to know.
Well, I wrote a comedy in hell, so I definitely put a
comedy, you say?
It's a comedy. I know all that shit about tyrants and
it's
and
all humorous?
Child and no refugees, way. But there's definitely a lot of humor in there. Because to me, the only way you can talk about really dark topics is to have humor. Like, that's the only way to do it. And honestly, how many novels in hell with cannibals and child soldiers
and humor
and border
and a love
walls
story.
Do you know, have you read this year? I've only read like three.
I haven't read any except yours. So, but yeah, it was a good one.
Yeah, you read it. How did you like it?
I liked it a lot. Yeah. I thought it was very intriguing. And of course, I've always loved your sense of humor, right? So like, there's elements of Josh's humor. For those of you who watch our show, you know, like, you're hilarious. And so there's definitely...
Oh, I am.
And I did love that you made the therapist kill the main character. Because I was like, I know this isn't about me, but it kind of feels like it a little bit.
It kind of is a little bit. You killed me.
You're kind of like, Angela kills people.
Oh, you
in
definitely
therapy.
Killed me last year.
I sure did. But hopefully
you
come
definitely,
back.
Oh, I've definitely come back a lot. Definitely. But yeah.
That's what marriage is, people.
Oh, yeah. You just die on the inside over and over and over again.
You have good years and bad years. That's the reality.
Oh, yeah. Like, we've had a couple of bad years along the way, but I still love you.
Well, good. I'm glad you still love me. Cheers.
Cheers.
All right. Well, any final thoughts, or do you want to just put in a plug?
Go check out the blog. It's www.androidslavery.com. Mm. It's weird. It's interesting. I'm telling my life story with a little bit of perspective of an android.
Well, good. Thank you for joining us today, Josh. It was good hearing about that inner wild world of yours.
Yeah, and I'm going to go into a lot more detail on a lot of the things we talked about here, so you'll hear more about the cult. I'm probably going to actually write just a straight-up article about what that cult was. Like, while I was two when they left, while I didn't experience it, they did, and I can write a little bit about that.
So. Well, and everybody loves cults. So,
I know, right?
You know, maybe not being in them, but everybody likes to learn about them.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, people, tell me about your cult.
People love, like, weird religious cults. They love serial killers.
Oh,
they love all the weird
anything
and
weird and more.
They love people who call themselves androids. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. He is an android. It's the way you live life. All right. Well, thank you for joining us, Josh.
It was awesome. Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Good to be here.
Check it out. Androidslavery.com.
All right, thank you.
Bye.
Bye.